tie up a loose end here in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, then back to the unveiling 19, and going to get through that and start chapter 20. We're only three chapters away from the finish of this series. Welcome to the Revelation series. This is Martin Zender. We're off on another week of scriptural revelation and really talking about God together. That's what we do. We discuss things together. We're fellow members of the body of Christ, most of us, I assume, and we have fellowship with one another via the laundry room and the internet. And Judy Garland and the lamp, I think, is nice here. I know you haven't seen the phone cord in a while on the laundry cam. I thought about dipping it down here, but it seems to want to spring back up. I don't know what's happening with this phone cord. Let's forget about it. Okay, let's, Revelation, 2 Thessalonians 2. I want to make sure I point out to you that these signs and false miracles, with every seduction of injustice among those who are perishing, to whom God will send an operation of deception for them to believe the falsehood. A startling passage, I talked about this Friday. Now, the operation of deception, I took a bit of a liberty there on Friday, and I told you that the deceptions I can potentially include in that list would be the doctrinal deceptions of eternal torment. That was my main one. Free will, the Trinity. These are deceptions that people love, that God brings. But the deceptions of the immediate context are those concerning the man of lawlessness and the end times. And that the man of lawlessness will be agreeable to everyone. Everyone will learn to love him. And the era will be so agreeable to everybody. People are going to love what's happening with the world. It's amazing. As I said before, things are going to be coming together and it's going to be like, what? How did this happen? Well, that should give you the first clue that for centuries, people have been unable to get together and make things happen. Now we have 10 kings forming one opinion. That's different. Yeah, it's because God produces a miracle to make things suddenly work politically, governmentally, socially, and we're going to have an era of peace and plenty. And the white horse rider, I remind you, the false white horse rider has a wreath around his head and a bow with an arrow, which speaks of victory in war. Well, the arrow speaks of war. The wreath speaks of victory in war. I predict to you, I say to you today, that this war will be the victory of the West over Islam. We will squelch those little desert rats who come over here to kill us. And closing the borders is part of that. Building up the military is part of that. Being able to call our enemy radical Islamic terrorism is part of that. None of these things would have happened had Hillary Clinton been elected. Therefore, Donald Trump is instrumental to bringing about this victory in war. Hey, war is hell. I don't like war. I hate war. But Jesus said there will be wars and rumors of wars, and we're looking at really global conflict. Everybody's going to be in on it. Nobody likes the terrorists. Well, some people do, I guess. The terrorists like themselves. There are many Muslims who need to really castigate these people and castrate them, sure. But they don't, because everybody's afraid of them. Trump isn't, which is amazing. And so this is major fulfillment of prophecy, Daniel chapter 9. All right, we're going back to the unveiling, chapter 19. Look who I got a bookmark here. I'm using, for my bookmark in Revelation 19, I've been using Lovell and Linda Griffith of St. Charles, Missouri. There they are. I told them I had to fold them in half. So we have Linda here, and you turn it over, and there's Lovell. Linda, Lovell, Linda, Lovell. And so it's more handy to fold them in half to make them into a bookmark, even though it's a glossy photo. I've defiled it, but no, I haven't. I've just made it practical. And that's what I said I would use these photos for that you send me as bookmarks in my Bible. I have to mutilate them as needed. Now, Revelation chapter 19. Where did we leave off here? You know, what really bothers me that it's called a great dinner of God, a great dinner of God. All right. He will be shepherding the nations with an iron club, Revelation 19:15. I'm moving through this. Revelation 19:15. He will be shepherding them with an iron club, and he is treading the wine trough of the fury of the indignation of God. Yes, we covered that. God the Almighty, and on his cloak and on his thigh, he has a name written, King of Kings, Lord of Lords. There are other kings, there are other lords, but he is the King of the Kings, he is the Lord of the Lords. Your landlord is a lord. That's right. Elvis was the king of rock and roll, but he was not the king. No. Jesus Christ trumps Elvis, and he also trumps your landlord. Verse 17, and I perceived another messenger standing in the sun, and he cries, I said, this was a good thing, remember, and it is. Standing in the sun, pictures glory. And he cries with a loud voice, saying to all the birds which are flying in mid-heaven, hither, be gathered for the great dinner of God, that ye may be eating the flesh of kings, and the flesh of captains, and the flesh of the strong, and the flesh of horses, and those sitting on them. Many people will be more upset about the horses here than the poor horses than the people, but that's okay. And of those sitting on them, and the flesh of all freemen as well as slaves, and of small and of great. God likes this phrase, small and great, or in verse 18 of the unveiling chapter 19, because it covers everybody. The small and the great are put in one, are treated the same. That's what I want to say. And again, the analogy of the Titanic comes to mind. The small and the great were both sinking to the bottom of the Atlantic. The rich, the John Jacob Astors of the first class of the Titanic were right there sinking along with the third class steerage passengers. The Irish coming across, all in the same boat. So the small and the great become one at the extremity of this eon. And I think it's helpful for us to keep that in mind today, because we know that the chiefs of this eon lord it over us. The celebrities, the rich, the famous, they lord it over us. The captains of this world, the movers, the shakers, the great evangelists, the great political leaders, they're all lording it over us. We are nothing. But when push comes to shove and the truth shines forward, we see that in God's mind, he treats the great and the small, and the small and the great the same. And the small and the great, here they are in a common lot, on the ground, dead, being fed upon by vultures. These are the birds that are called by the loud voice. And the loud voice is from a messenger. And messengers are in charge of the fish, the fowl, and the beasts of the earth. And they obey a greater master, these creatures. They hear the voice. Yes, just as Jesus said, my sheep hear my voice. Well, the vultures hear the voice of this messenger flying in mid-heaven. The messenger's flying, so it must be, maybe it's doing that to ingratiate itself to the vultures, to fellowship with the vultures. It is a flyer just like the vultures. It seems like I'm belittling this and making fun of it. Believe me, I'm not. This stuff is going to happen. And it's very practical. In spite of all this, you see that the vultures are going to feast on the corpses. Because look, after Jesus Christ returns to this earth, there's a 75-day gap between that time, when Christ sets his feet on the Mount of Olives. There's a 75-day gap between that and the former resurrection. That is when the circumcision saints come alive, talking Peter, talking James, talking John, talking the other disciples, talking David, Abraham, Isaac, Daniel, Isaiah, Elijah, the big boys. The A-listers are coming out of their graves, and there needs to be some kind of semblance of order, and it's going to be 75 days to clean up the mess. Have you seen the pictures of Woodstock after the three-day Woodstock festival? Peace, love, and music. Well, it was quite a mess, and crews cleaned up that place, and I don't know how long it took, but it's going to take 75 days. And remember, every building on the planet has been torn down. Every one. Every building has been destroyed. So you don't want the, you don't want David coming in on a total wreck, do you? No, I would not want it, and that's not going to happen. David's going to come in on a restored earth. So hither be gathered for the great dinner of God. What? That's really tongue-in-cheek, I think. At first, that put me off. The great dinner of God. Hey, dinner served. You know, you hear the ding, 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 ding. Dinner served. Now, what they do is they put a little stick in the triangle. Brrr. In this case, the dinner is the flesh of hundreds of thousands of people, the small and the great, that will be eaten by the birds to get rid of them to make room for the rightful owners of the earth. Verse 19. In the last three verses here. And I perceived the wild beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered to do battle with him who is sitting on the horse with his army. And the wild beast is arrested, and with it the false prophet. Now we're getting to the head players, the chief players on the evil side of things. The wild beast, the kings of the earth. These were the ones who were so high and mighty, so flying high, so set up, lubricated in their endeavors. And now we see all the lubrication has been pulled out of their precious little cylinders. The pistons are jamming, and the engine is seizing, and it's all over. It is all over. The vehicle is no longer moving. It has been arrested. It has been arrested. Those who gathered to, who dared to gather to do battle with him who was sitting on the horse with his army, in this case, the true rider, Christ, the wild beast is arrested, and with it the false prophet, who does signs in its sight by which he deceives those getting the emblem of the wild beast and those worshiping his image. Those who get the image of the wild beast, those who worship the image, have been seduced, been influenced, captured by signs. This is why I'm very discouraging of anyone paying attention to any signs today. My first gut reaction is, it's false, false, false. But Martin, false, false, false. But my friend said she heard false, false. It's all false. Does signs in his sight. And the signs are those things by which those getting the emblem of the wild beast and those worshiping its image were deceived. Living, the adversary and the wild beast, the two are cast into the lake of fire burning with sulfur. We will find in the next chapter that there are only two burning that are cast into the lake of fire, and as the adversary and the false prophet. This happens in earnest at the end of the thousand-year period, because for the thousand years, the adversary is going to be locked into the submerged chaos. I don't believe the submerged chaos is the lake of fire. No, it's not the same thing. I do believe the submerged chaos is related to Tartarus, where the disobedient spirits are. But apparently, the absence of light bugs them. Darkness lays inertia on them. Darkness inhibits their movement. So does water. Spiritual beings do not like darkness or water. The rest were killed with a blade which is coming out of the mouth of him who is sitting on the horse. Yeah, well, we just read about the marriage feast that's beginning here, and that the blade comes forth and cuts down the enemies of God, and all the birds are satiated with their flesh. That's verse 21 of the Unveiling 19. As far as I'm concerned, ladies and gentlemen, I am completely done with chapter 19. What we have seen here is the rise and fall of the wild beast and its worshipers, and the kings of the earth who have allied themselves with the wild beast. There's a hierarchy here. There's a hierarchy. We have Satan, who's motivating the wild beast. We have the wild beast, who's motivating the false prophet. We have the false prophet, who is doing miracles and therefore motivating the worshipers. And there are small worshipers, and there are great worshipers, and there are small, even among the kings, there are probably small and great. But it doesn't matter at this point. It doesn't matter, because they are all treated as one, and they are laid flat. They are leveled. And finally, the wild beast is arrested. And the question opens itself up. Why wasn't the wild beast arrested before? In fact, you could ask that question about Satan. Why wasn't Satan arrested at the Garden of Eden, when before all of this happened. It's always amazing to me how easily God arrests Satan. All of a sudden, he just steps in and says, okay, that's enough. Because these beings, these powers, these deceptions must continue. And they're enabled to continue. Yes, God enables the deception. Not because he has some sort of codependency where it fulfills him to make other people happy. No, it doesn't make him happy. It's a strain to keep evil going. The presence of evil proves the existence of God because evil is self-destructive. It will eat itself left to its own devices. God does not dare leave evil to its own devices. He does not leave the adversary or the false prophet to their own devices. They are not allowed, but caused. They are encouraged. They have obstacles taken out of their way miraculously so that their careers can continue throughout this 3.5 years. And then suddenly, what do you know? Suddenly, Babylon is destroyed overnight. No, not overnight, in 1 hour. And suddenly, it's so easy for God to arrest, for the true white horse rider, to arrest the beast, to smash the career of the false prophet. So easy. Why didn't he do it sooner? Because he needs them. He needs them to bring to fulfillment, to bring to a crisis all the evil that humanity has ever done. And folks, that has been going on for much longer than 3.5 years. The whole of it, the barrage of it, non-stop hammering of it. But it's coming to its head, just like everything else on the chart I showed you. I'll keep referencing that chart, because those charts of how we're on this exponential curve of trauma, trial, complexity. Same thing's happening with the beast. Same thing's happening with evil. It's coming to a head, coming to a head, coming to a head, coming to a head, and then crisis point. And God says, thus far shall your proud waves come and no further. God's going to stop it. He's stopping it here at the end of the unveiling, chapter 19. And now we're going to see judgment begin at chapter 20. And the judgment will lead to a further arrest of evil and a further blossoming of righteousness. And this is what you and I long to see.